Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In the United States, we like to brag about our work culture. Our workers are the most productive in the world, and our dedication to our jobs is such that traditionally we haven't taken all of the vacation we're due or often work during vacations because we feel we'll be letting down our employer if we don't. But we also don't get sick or family leave to the degree workers in other nations do. But could that paradigm be about to shift? The outbreak of coronavirus is undeniably changing our work patterns. Many more are working from home because they have to. The spreading virus may test the limits of sick leave and family provisions as workers become ill and or have to take care of family members. They may exceed the amount of leave they have available to them. Plus, their attention will be focused on their homes and families and not necessarily on work. Could this outbreak result in a paradigm shift? Could it change Americans' relationship to work? Kenny Colbert is president and CEO of the Employers Association in Charlotte. They represent over 900 organizations in this area. And although he could have joined us in our Spirit Square studio, out of an abundance of caution over coronavirus, we asked him to be with us by phone. Welcome back.
Good morning.
We also welcome back Bridget Schulte. She is the director of the Better Life Lab at New America and a former staff writer for the Washington Post. She's also the author of Overwhelmed, How to Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. Welcome back to you as well. She joins us, by the way, from Alexandria, Virginia. Good morning.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
You're welcome. Kenny, before we talk about working from home, the Senate yesterday passed a relief package. The president signed it last night, too, to provide paid sick leave, free testing for the coronavirus, and food and medical aid to people impacted by this pandemic. And lawmakers are at work even now drafting yet another $1 trillion stabilization package to send direct payments to taxpayers and loans to businesses. So will any of this be helpful or helpful enough in any meaningful way for a long enough period of time if this thing drags on into the summer?
Well, I don't know if it's ever going to be enough, but it certainly is helpful and it's a good start. There are several parts to this new legislation. The first part is the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act, which will allow people to receive up to 2 weeks of pay. And this is for all employees with companies under 500 employees. And in essence, there's no minimum amount of service to be entitled to this paid leave. So people that started, say, a week or so ago would be entitled to this leave. And then the second part is expanding the Family Medical Leave Act that would, in essence, provide up to 12 weeks of protected paid leave. The first 2 weeks are going to be unpaid, so really it's 10 weeks of paid leave. But both of these bills are related to people who are either sick or seeking treatment or having to stay home and take care of children who are not able to go to school or to daycare.
And is it specifically geared for those who are seeking treatment or who are ill? Is it specifically geared to people who are suffering from the coronavirus, or could
yes.
it be something else?
This is not related to a business shutdown or anything like that. That's where unemployment compensation would come in and take care of that. But this is people who are sick or either because of COVID-19 or they're taking care of someone in their immediate surroundings.
Okay.
It doesn't even have to be a family member. Somebody in their immediate surroundings that they are providing care for.
And does this cover people like waiters and waitresses and other people in the service industry who are not covered by wages? They make most of their money on tips.
Exactly right. So you've got people who are either part-time, they're going to be covered under this, people with variable hours. So in those situations, you would take an average of their earnings over the previous 6 months to come up with what their weekly wages would be.
And where do you go to get this? Where do you apply for this? Who do you tell that I need this help?
Well, it's going to be it's going to come into effect in 15 days, and we're still waiting for all of the details to emerge. But it's going to be the company's obligation to pay this, and then there are going to be tax credits for these companies who do pay this money.
Yeah, Bridget, there've been a lot of discussions because we're in such uncharted territory right now. A lot of discussions on what to do, if we should do anything, who it should be focused at. Should it be focused at businesses, at big businesses or small businesses or both? Or should the money or whatever relief package Congress comes up with be focused on individuals? In the economic downturn of 2000, whatever it was, eight, big businesses got bailed out, the banks, the automobile manufacturers, and a lot of people complained that the little people, the ordinary citizen, was left out of that relief package. Where is this relief going? The relief that they're talking about, where is it aimed at mostly?
Yeah, no, but that's absolutely right. And that was there was a lot of real complaint about the pain after the 2008 economic downturn. You had businesses too big to fail, but then you had plenty of people who were foreclosed upon or saw their savings or their life savings or their retirement dry up. And why was it okay to bail out the big banks and not to give average citizens, workers, some help in that really horrible situation? In this situation, one thing I do want to make clear, we were just talking about paid sick leave and, we're talking about who are we really benefiting here. I think it's really important to note that when the House passed its first version of the bill early morning hours last Saturday, they actually did originally cover employers who employ over 500 people. And then over the course of lobbying and negotiating with the White House, that got removed. And what's really important about that, people need to know that is where, about half the workforce works for companies of over 500 employers. So, we're talking about workers who, all of us, as we're trying to do all this social distancing, these are workers that we're going to rely on who are in the grocery stores. These are restaurant workers. This is Walmart and McDonald's and Burger King and Kroger and Subway. Some of these companies have now come out and voluntarily said that they will offer paid sick days, but many have been silent. Some say that they will cover full-time workers, but not part-time workers. There's a lot of confusion. I think it's really important right now as people are beginning to make decisions about where to go, where to order, what to buy, that they understand who actually is going to be having these paid sick days. I mean, this is part of, who are we benefiting here? Are we benefiting the big businesses or, not only workers, but, everyone else who needs to practice social distancing?
I suppose the argument could be, but certainly people are going to need help, because if your salary stops, and there are a lot of people who cannot go to work now because everything is closed, the guy behind the popcorn stand at the movie theater is not working right now. So they're going to need help with rent and utilities and everyday life. And if this thing stretches on into August or September, they're really going to be critically hurt by this. People only have so much savings. Some people have none at all. But the argument could be made that if you don't help the businesses, that when we come out of the other side of this, there will be no businesses to go back to work for. Is that an accurate statement, Kenny?
Yes. And back to something that Bridget said here, a lot of the larger companies already offer some type of paid leave time. Now, granted, there are plenty that do not, but a lot of them offer this. So this bill was focused toward the smaller businesses, again, the restaurants and things like this. This is the hospitality industry keeps coming up over and over again. And I heard something this morning that said that as many as 40% of the restaurants in North Carolina that are closing right now will possibly not open back up again after this is over.
And as a matter of fact, on this morning's Morning Edition, somebody said the restaurant business, if you're closed for a month, it is likely that you're not coming back.
Exactly right.
So do you think but these restaurants are not completely closed, most of them. They are offering takeout. Will that save the core business, do you think?
Everything that I am hearing is it's probably not. These restaurants are not going to be able to survive on takeout alone.
Wow. In Charlotte, prior to the outbreak of this virus, do we know how many people worked from home? Kenny?
I've seen studies, and it varies, et cetera, but as much as really 60% of area companies offer some type of flexibility for employees to work at home.
So how many employers are encouraging their workers to do so right now? I don't think it's mandated at the moment, but how many employers are saying don't come in if you don't have to?
I don't know the exact number, but I can tell you this. We're getting, in our office alone, we're getting 30 or so phone calls per day related to this. And the majority of the companies that we're talking to are encouraging employees to work from home if possible.
And how many employers are equipped to allow this? Should we be told to shelter in place and you will not be able to go to work? How are they set up to deal with this? Do people working from home, because not everybody works on a computer. Not everybody can get access to digital files somewhere in the cloud that the company has stored. And there, of course, are security concerns about that in some businesses like the medical profession and the legal profession. So are most businesses set up for this?
Well, if they're predominantly in a white-collar type environment, there's a high probability they're either set up or making plans to be set up. But let's face it, there are a lot of manufacturing companies, warehousing and distribution, assembly type operations that their employees just can't work from home, or either the largest part of them can't work from home. And that's been a big phone call that we have received is, you know, we've got 10 employees who are able to work from home, but we have 50 employees who have to stay here and run their machines. This is creating a really big employee relations problem for us. Etc. So we've been dealing with that issue every day.
Well, perhaps that's what it means. What the Atlantic magazine means, Bridget, when they say that the coronavirus is creating a huge stressful experiment in working from home. On whom is it stressful, the employee or the employer?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. We're in a, you know, when we talk about going to remote work, we've never been in this place before. You know, most remote work, there are some companies that are completely remote, distributed companies, but they tend to be very small or they tend to be kind of more in the tech sector. Most places that do have telework or work from home policies, and I do want to say caution to say that having a policy does not mean that people feel that they can use it. There are surveys that show a really big disconnect between managers who say, yes, we have a policy, and then the people who feel that they can actually use it without being penalized. So there is that kind of disconnect in culture. But I think it's really important to recognize that even in the best circumstances, most sort of high-performance, flexible work environments work from home maybe 2 or 3 days a week. There is sort of this toggling between collaborative work time and concentrated work time, but again, pretty much only in a white-collar setting. So for blue-collar workers, manufacturers, you know, everyone that Kenny's talking about, people are trying to get creative. They're trying to figure out, do we institute staggered shifts so that you have fewer people on site together? I mean, it's really forcing us to be creative because, again, we've never been in a place like this before, even after there are natural disasters, but, you know, it doesn't affect the entire country.
Right.
Even after 9/11, that was a horrendous disaster, but we were able to come together and grieve and things could continue on. We've really never been here before. And it's going to take an awful lot of creativity for us to figure this out.
Bridget Schulte is the director of the Better Life Lab, and Kenny Colbert is with us. He's the president and CEO of the Employers Association in Charlotte. They represent about 900 businesses. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Kenny Colbert, President and CEO of the Employers Association in Charlotte, is with us along with Bridget Schulte, Director of the Better Life Lab and author of Overwhelmed, How to Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. The United States is alone among advanced countries in, I don't know why we have this love affair with work, because the United States is alone among advanced countries in not offering any federal mandated paid sick leave. The Small Business Administration, I am told today, approved Governor Cooper's request for federal and for business, federal aid for business owners, and they'll be able to apply for disaster relief loans. We'll talk about that in a second. But how lenient are most of the 900 companies you work with, Kenny, in terms of sick leave? How lenient do you see them being in the face of what this coronavirus thing is going to turn out to be?
Well, the large majority of our members already offer some type of sick leave policies, but people are now are talking about expanding them. Do we need to offer longer sick leave? Do we need to offer larger amounts of sick leave? So everything is under discussion. But quite honestly, I think a lot of people were waiting to see what came out of this bill that was passed last night because, right, as we've said, you know, it's changed several times over the past 4 or 5 days. So I think a lot of people are just sitting eagerly awaiting to see what that's going to be before they make any changes to their policies.
So as I mentioned a second ago, the Small Business Administration today approved Governor Cooper's request for federal aid for business owners, and they'll be able to apply for disaster relief loans. What do you think this will mean? How will it work, Kenny? Is it targeted to specific industries, or do you know?
I do not know about that.
Okay.
I've not followed that closely.
So a lot of people are working from home. Some of them have already been working at home, but now this is going to force them perhaps around the country to do this. The internet has made it easier for us to work almost from anywhere. We can get the digital files. We can interface with clients both on the phone and in FaceTime situations and on Zoom and other apps that you can actually see the person you're talking to. We can send and receive emails as though we were at the office. But for those not accustomed to working from home, Bridget, will this actually be more difficult, more time-consuming? Because they're going to have to, some of them have to learn new systems that they may have never used, and maybe not many of them are technologically savvy. Will this be a tough thing to adjust to?
This is absolutely going to be a tough thing to adjust to. There are a lot of people who don't have the equipment, the systems, the processes set up. The other thing to think about, too, is that this is not your typical, I'm going to have some concentrated work time to work on a project, or I'm going to go to a coffee shop and get this, you know, knock out this big project. You know, people have children at home. Schools are closed. Universities are closed. They've got very grumpy teenagers, in my case, who are home from college who don't want to be here, and they're going online with their classes. You know, you've got more people working from home. You're kind of bumping up against each other in situations or places that you haven't really set up for it. You know, some people are going to be sick, or they're going to be caring for people who are sick. I mean, we can't forget that this is all driven by a very highly infectious and dangerous viral pandemic that's out there. So there's a lot of fear and unknown and anxiety that just makes, you know, what is, you know, technologically something you really need to think and plan for. People don't have the time to do that.
Yeah, and you haven't got
to. I would like to go back to one quick point. Just about the paid sick days. You know, Kenny makes a good point that a number of companies do offer paid sick days to their employees. You know, the United States does not have a national paid sick days policy, but it's really important to remember that 1/4 of all workers don't even have a single day of paid sick days. They tend to be lower wage workers, hourly workers, restaurant workers, servants, service workers, so that even some of the companies that we mentioned before, that where Kenny says they do have paid sick days policies, they tend to be for headquarters employees and not for frontline restaurant workers. That's so important to remember now during this pandemic. The CDC reports that in a previous norovirus outbreak, 1 in 5 food service workers reported coming into work sick, vomiting, diarrhea, because they were afraid that they would be fired or they'd lose their job or they couldn't pay their bills. That's what we're talking about here. I mean, this level of danger we really need to all be part of. And so
this is showing cracks in our system that people have ignored, because we have one idea of how America operates and how fair it is and how you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and you'll get ahead. And then we have the reality on the ground where the certain key workers that really keep businesses afloat are almost Well, many of them are unpaid because if you're making tips, you're not making wages, and you don't have any of the benefits that come along with salaried employees. And we're seeing the impact of that in a time like this. Do you think that going through this, our attitude toward things like paid sick leave, family leave, extended vacations, health care will change?
You know, I certainly hope so. And I certainly let Kenny talk. But, you know, I think it's really important to remember we're the only advanced economy that doesn't offer paid maternity leave. Now, that's nothing short of cruelty. There are states where it's illegal to separate a puppy from its mother before 8 weeks, and yet you have one in four mothers going back to work within 2 weeks. So our policies are really out of step. They were set in an era of the 1930s, when most policymakers thought that all families were breadwinner homemaker families. That's the minority of families now. So the workforce has changed. Our policies need to change to catch up.
I know you deal with business, Kennedy, and what we just talked about, the attitudes about whether where your health care should come from are really governmental as opposed to just business, because of the trend that seems to be away from employer-provided health care toward government-provided health care. But do you think that attitudes about that will change as we go forward into this pandemic?
Well, following up on some things that Bridget just said, you know, this legislation that was passed last night is supposed to expire at the end of the year. You know, who knows if it will be extended or not. But that means we'll have 9 months of paid leave. I find it very difficult to think that we're going to back away totally from paid leave at the end of 9 months. People are going to get used to this. People are going to be talking about this. It's going to be very hard to take away something 9 months from now. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens in Congress, probably in about October, November, et cetera, as the expiration date is coming close. Do we extend this? Is it permanent, or is this a one-time shot? That's going to be an interesting conversation.
You know, Bernie Sanders is running largely on this kind of worker-first mentality. And much of what he has to say, I suppose, in some people's view is very wrong, but in other people's view, it makes perfect sense. But it always makes the employer, the big business, out to be the boogeyman. So let me ask you this, and I know you work for businesses, and so I think I know what your answer is going to be. Employers can be pretty understanding about this in this environment that is extraordinary, but really, how understanding can they afford to be before they can't support themselves anymore? I don't mean the bosses, I mean the business.
You're exactly right. Take a look at these small companies that have 10, 20, 30 employees in the hospitality industry. It's not a largely profitable industry to start with. And something like this comes along where you're, in essence, faced with mandatory paid leave. This could be make or break for some companies. Now, fortunately, for the time being, there's going to be tax credits related to paid leave. If paid leave is extended, will the tax credits be extended as well? We just don't know. But a lot of very small business owners, again, the one-horse operations, you know, 10 employees, et cetera, they are just nervous as everything about this.
Social Security came around as the result of the Great Depression in 1934. Are we going to see something happen? Because this is going to cause, I think it's going to be far worse. I'm not an expert, but what I'm hearing from people talking about this, if this goes on for months and months, this is going to cause a depression, not a recession, a depression worldwide. Are we going to see social programs? Because the government has to step in. Are we going to see social programs increase, and then we become attached to them?
Well, you know, these are all good questions, and we don't know the answer to them. I've seen all the different scenarios out there as well, you know, recession, a deep recession to a depression. I just think that we don't know. We're in a really new territory. But in terms of how we respond to it, you know, the depression saw widespread starvation, you know, widespread real suffering of people. And so I think that we need to, and government stepped in to respond that, you know, when the government is charged with the health and welfare and the well-being of a nation, you know, this is, you could argue, this is the role of what, you know, this is when the government does need to step up. And then what happens on the other side of that? I think we're just going to have to go through it to see.
So even in the best of times, when people were in normal times 2 weeks ago and working from home, some work from home employees would freely tell you that it requires immense self-discipline, self-determination, time management, and focus to work from home, because you're at home and you can always find things to do that relate to your home life as opposed to your work life. So how important is it for people who are just entering into this new world to, how important is the space, Bridget, that you set aside in your home to do that work? What would the ideal conditions be? And if you don't have ideal conditions, how can you make a place in your house that is amenable to work, that gives you privacy, but also allows you to keep an ear out for kids who are at home because their schools are closed?
So, you know, we just had a massive virtual meeting at New America about this very thing. You know, a number of our programs have some experience with remote work, so a number of people were able to share really some great tips. I think the first thing to mention is, you know, lower your expectations. You know, there were all these messages going out on social media. It's like, oh, during the, you know, some horrible plague when Shakespeare was quarantined, he wrote King Lear. So I think that we need to, like, lower our expectations around King Lear. You know, find a place, find some time, think about chunking your time. One of the most important things after lowering your expectations is being really clear with your team. What is it that you are going to do? What are your priorities? Who's going to do what? And communicate that. Find ways to communicate regularly. If you have one-on-ones, if you're a manager and you've got one-on-ones, keep those one-on-ones. Do it via Zoom or Google Chat or video if you can. But communication is really clear, really important. And the final thing about communication that's so interesting, research finds that remote workers are actually better at communicating because they have to be. And, you know, so communicate deliberately, but also create channels for what would have been hallway chatter. You know, that's where a lot of our relationships are built. That's how our cultures are built at work. So some people have, like, random Slack channels where you just share something about your life. I shared a picture of my cat who was keeping me company as I worked the other day. You know, to continue to connect as human beings. Other people are holding virtual coffee chats or virtual happy hours. Again, we're just going to have to be creative in how we use technology and leverage it to stay connected. Yeah,
the yes, go ahead, Kenny.
Two points about this, and this has been a very popular phone call that we've received in the last couple of weeks, is some employees need close supervision and they need guidance and they can't work independently. So companies are calling us and saying, hey, we have one accounts payable clerk who is a self-starter. I have no problem with that person working from home, but I've got someone in a comparable job that I just don't want to work from home because I can't even manage them that well in the office. How am I going to manage them when they're working remotely? That's a very popular question that companies are having to deal with right now. And secondly, you have to realize that some people are ideally suited for working from home. Thankfully, I am the president of the Employers Association, because if I was a rank-and-file employee, they would have already fired me because I am probably the worst at-home worker you've ever seen. It takes me 12 hours to do 8 hours worth of work. I am sitting in my office right now talking to you. We have 30 people working from home, but Kenny's in the office today because I can be more productive here than home. Companies have to take a hard look at their individual employees and see who's suited for this and who's not.
So Kenny just said something that I was going to ask you about anyway, Bridget, and that is, if you're working from home, one part of the problem is you may be distracted by various things around the house, including your kids, and the fact that they're hogging the Wi-Fi, and so you can't send that big spreadsheet because it just won't go through because your Wi-Fi is being hogged by 14 other people in the house streaming video. But the other side of that coin is your desk, your computer, your work life is always available to you at home 24/7. How do you know when to shut it down for the day?
Well, you know, this is really an important point because you were saying that there are so many distractions at home, and there are. And granted, in this coronavirus pandemic, there will be even more distractions and fear and anxiety. But actually, what the research shows is that people who work remotely end up working more hours. Because just for that very thing, sometimes it's difficult to know when do you start, when do you end. So one of the things that we're advising people to do is, again, get really clear. Kenny brings up some really good points. There are some people who are really suited to this, but this is a skill that you need to train and learn and develop. And high performance, flexible and remote cultures, they've gone through that process where they've really thought about what is our work and how do we do it and who does it and when, and do we have office hours? Do we work asynchronously? You know, it takes a lot of work to be a high-performance remote culture, and now you've got people turning on a dime without these conversations, without this preparation. You know, so recognize it's a skill that needs to be developed, and if somebody doesn't know how to do it now, they need training, because it's not like everybody can go back into the cubicles, and it's not like getting them back into the cubicle means that they're all of a sudden going to be productive. It's, you know, performance issues are going to become even clearer with remote work, but then it gives you an opportunity to address them more effectively as well. We have to be looking at this creatively, and we have to be looking at this as an opportunity to really do some learning here, because we don't really have a choice.
Mike, I think a key to this is working in time blocks. In essence, you set aside a 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour block, and you pull down the shades and you close the door and you don't look at the laundry piling up, you don't look at the grass growing, you don't look at the kids doing other things, and you work solely focused for a short period of time. Take your break, go do your other activities, and come back to do it again. So in essence, it may take you 12 hours to do 8 hours worth of work, but you are really, really focused for that brief period of time there. That's the key.
So, well, and I think it's a really good point, because, you know, if you look at the sort of the brain science about how our brain works anyway, we tend to work in 90-minute cycles. You know, that's about as long as we can pay attention. So think about using timers. You know, set a timer for 90 minutes. You know, figure out what you're going to do in that block, or even 25 minutes. Use Pomodoro methods. But that's really good advice to chunk your time. You know, make sure that you have your timer, focus when you can, but really take breaks during the day. You'll need it. You're going to go stir crazy, and come up with a ritual at the end of the day for when you're going to sign off. When are you done?
Okay, let me stop you there, because we're done for this segment. We have to take a break. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about working from home, this new paradigm under the COVID-19 outbreak, what it may mean, and not only to people involved in it right now who are having to adapt to this shifting paradigm, but also how it might change things in the future. Will we like this? Will we take a more lenient attitude toward working from home? Will we take a more lenient attitude going forward with sick and paid family leave and other things? And we're talking about all that with Kenny Colbert, President and CEO of the Employers Association in Charlotte. Bridget Schulte is with us, Director of the Better Life Lab in Virginia, and the author of Overwhelmed, How to Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. A couple of things have been coming in from listeners as we've been talking. Alexandra emails, my husband and I both work from home teaching lessons. He teaches group piano lessons, and I teach wedding dance lessons. He's planning to go online with remote lessons on Zoom. That's an app you can use on your phone or on your desktop computer where you can see and talk to people in groups. Anyway, he's going to go online with remote lessons on Zoom next week and hasn't had much pushback. Most of my couples, though, are postponing their weddings and rescheduling their lessons instead of taking me up on my offer to teach them via video conference. Since we are self-employed, we aren't sure how the unemployment benefits work for us in the case that everyone reschedules to future dates and we are out of work for the next couple of months. In the meantime, I'm ramping up my online courses and preparing to not get paid for 6 months or more. I have a 7-month-old, so I'm just acting like I'm on unpaid maternity leave again. What about people like that, Kenny? Are they covered by this act that was signed last night?
Well, they're self-employed, so again, we're waiting to see further clarifications. I can't wait to see the little nuances of the law, but from my understanding, since they are self-employed, they would not be covered by the law, from what I have read so far.
Cheryl emails, so many of my associates are contract workers. This is a reality of our current employment environment. Is there help on the horizon for them, Kenny?
Well, again, this is only for employees of corporations. So for contractors, the answer is no, unless they have their own company where they have set up an LLC. It may apply in that situation there. But again, if you're just a standalone person, et cetera, from what I am reading, it is not going to cover that person.
What about people who are landlords? What about people who are landlords and who have people who are not going to be able to pay their rent if this lasts for a long period of time? Are they protected in any way? Have discussions centered on any of those people?
So, well, this is Bridget. If I could just interrupt real briefly, there is a lot of confusion still out there about these bills, but I will say gig workers and self-employed workers, they are covered with the paid sick days bill. They're looking at tax credits that can help help cover their sick pay. So they are covered in sort of a new and creative way, gig and self-employed workers. And I also think for the small businesses, Kenny had mentioned there's a third package, about $1 trillion that lawmakers are starting to negotiate right now that's trying to get relief to small business owners and out there. So we don't know what that's going to entail yet, but I think everybody's very worried about that very scenario, about what happens to all those small businesses when that dries up. And then when it comes to landlords, there is also discussion about holding off on evictions. People can't pay their rent. Don't throw them out on the street, especially in the middle of a pandemic.
Well, who helps the landlord? Some of them have mortgages on those properties. They can't pay their mortgages if they don't get these rents.
And that's all of what's being discussed in this very large bailout package, that's still kind of taking shape as we speak. And nobody really quite knows all of what it entails yet.
So according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, only 29% of Americans have traditionally been able to work from home in recent years, including 1 in 20 service workers and more than half of information workers. The number is rising, but at the moment, before this pandemic hit, it was 29%. And prior to the outbreak, Kenny, the New York Times reported that despite the share of the labor force working from home, despite the fact that it had tripled in the past 15 years, early reviews of the practice are mixed at best. The Times reports that remote work can impede the creative sparks that fly when workers are interacting with each other, actual people rather than thumbnails on Slack. What are you hearing from area businesses that have allowed their workers to work from home? Is this impeding creativity? Is it a problem for them?
Well, yes, no, and maybe. You've got to have collaboration among your employees, and when you can get two or more people together, whether they're in the same room or whether they're teleconferencing, et cetera, their ideas flow off of one another, the juices start flowing, the creativity starts flowing, and wonderful things happen.
You can't do that on a conference call? You can't do that on a...
Well, you can't. So either some type of conference call or face-to-face. But generally, it works better when you can look at the other person and see the other person. Again, whether it's via computer screen or face-to-face, is you've got to have that interaction. And this is going to be the challenge for companies, is getting people together to collaborate.
So would you agree, Bridget, with the Times assessment, or were those people who are not as creative, who are causing lulls in creativity, simply not sufficiently trained on how to work in a virtual environment?
Well, I think that I think Kenny's right. Yes, no, and maybe is the right answer. There are some people who are highly motivated, that are able to be very creative and work very independently and autonomously. But when you're really thinking about an organization, there is a team culture, there is an organizational culture that is really important. And that's why, when you talk with workplace strategists, people who work with companies to really get them to be these high-performing, flexible cultures, what they'll say is that the best cultures, they're really very focused on what it is that they do and then organize the work around that to make it happen. And they do tend to toggle between remote and, sort of the best of remote work to do kind of concentrated time, but the best of collaborative time, FaceTime, where you're not going to endless meetings and you're not like drained all the time, but there are opportunities to really work together in a very intentional way, that the best organizations make the most out of both of those things. And so maybe what we'll do when we come out on the other side, hopefully, and we've learned all sorts of great lessons, maybe there'll be less, you know, endless meetings that people feel so drained by, and maybe there'll be more of an understanding that really great work environments have a little bit of both.
So despite the fact that the Times article says that the early reviews of working from home are mixed at best, there's another side to this. They also report that employees who work from home, quote, worked more, quit less, and said they were happier with their jobs. Meanwhile, the companies that they worked for reported saving more than $1,000 per employee on reduced office space. But then they flipped the coin again and pointed out that one complaint swamped every other complaint, and that was loneliness. Talk about that, Bridget. How do you replace social interaction that you get from fellow employees around the water cooler at the office or just walking down aisles of desks and saying good morning? How do you replace that?
Right. I mean, I don't think that we can understate. I mean, human beings are social creatures, and having that social connection is really, really important. And so it's so important right now, I would say, for all managers, all people, but really managers who have the responsibility for the health and well-being, the mental health and well-being of their workers right now, find ways that you can replicate those moments of connection. You know, whether it's like a random Slack channel where you can just say, you know, post pictures or talk about what you had for breakfast, you know, kind of the things that you would have talked about in the hallway. Host virtual coffees, find ways to use technology to stay connected. There was an essay in the New York Times recently about somebody who works solo remote all the time, and she pays to like hang out with people virtually. They don't talk or anything. She just has them on her screen just so she doesn't feel lonely. So we can't underestimate just how profoundly that will shape our experiences and how important that is to find ways to continue to reach out and connect.
So Dennis emails.
One point to add to that is that the rules have changed in the last 2 weeks because of the virus. But prior to this, a lot of companies that had people working from home required them to come to the office once a week or maybe once every 2 weeks so that they could be involved in team meetings and have interaction with their coworkers, right, et cetera. So once we get back to the norm, if at-home work continues, that's probably going to become the new norm there.
So while we've been talking, Dennis emails a comment that we actually talked about when the two of you were on this program for our Work-Life Balance series. He says, I've heard in my travels through Europe that Americans live to work, Europeans work to live, which is true. And many people working from home are also going to be caring now for ill relatives and taking care of children and perhaps trying to organize homeschooling for their kids while they're trying to work. As this goes on, if it goes on for any extended period of time, is this going to cause us to shift our attitude about the hierarchy in importance of where work falls in our lives? If people had been very work-focused, will this split focus change their perspective of what's really important, Bridget?
Well, you know, I would say it's not just people who have, you know, who are work focused. We're work focused because of the environment that we're in, the sort of the systems that we've created, and our systems are not very supportive of families. They're not very supportive of people who have a life outside of work. You know, we've mentioned it's the United States and South Korea that are the only countries with no paid sick days. It's the United States and like Nepal or someplace that has no paid vacation days. We don't have a sort of a national culture that indicates that having a work and time for work and life.
Yes, Bridget, that's my question. Are we gonna wake up to this and say, hey, I've been a sucker all these years?
You know, that could very well be. All I'm saying is that it's important not to just blame the worker here and say, oh, people are working because this is what they choose. I think they choose it because they feel like there isn't an option. And so if they're beginning to experience that there might be another way of working and living, they'll take that option.
One of the reasons that
I think we'll see a gradual shift in this, Mike, and it's going to be a slow shift because we've been operating this way for the last, 100 years, 200 years,
yep.
et cetera.
Yep.
But as the boomers, and I'll pick on myself and other people, we were trained that you work 45 hours a week. You're the first one in the office. You're the last one to go home, et cetera. As the boomer generation retires and moves on, you've got the millennials coming in who have a different way of thinking about this. So, yes, I think we're going to see a gradual but a slow shift in the philosophy on this.
And you don't think that this goes on, this work-from-home paradigm goes on until August or so, that's going to goose that a little bit and put it on a faster track?
Oh, I think it certainly will.
Okay.
This is going to be one of the biggest experiments in workplace history
that
we're going through for the next 6 months.
Because one of the reasons most of us work in the office environment is because until recently we had to. I mean, technology freed us from a lot of the structures that were created in the 19th and 20th centuries to make work at this scale possible. So will the experience of workers working from home because they have to put into motion changes and adaptations that these companies will allow to continue? Because, as we just said, it saves them $1,000 in office space per person. If this works, will companies be in the forefront of pushing people to work from home?
I think so to some degree. And again, as I just said, this is going to be a great experiment over the next 9 months or so to see how this works. This could be a big shift in workplace cultures for the next generation at least.
So a lot of people can't work from home because a lot of people can't work at all in this situation. And they're going to find out that a lot of things that they were available to them, no matter what kind of job they had, are no longer available to them. We don't have a lot of insurance-based or employer-based health insurance for some people. Will the impact of this realization that I'm really out here on my own make for a less loyal workforce when this is over, Bridget?
Well, you're raising, again, a really good point for people who we have employer-provided health insurance in this country, but really only since the days of the Second World War. Sometimes we have such short-term memory, we forget how things started. And that started because there were wage and price controls, and employers wanted to do something good for workers. And then that just sort of got enshrined, and this is the only way that we can do it. And so, maybe this is going to force us to rethink all of these policies, again, that were sort of set in motion in the 30s and 40s in a very different world. Maybe there's a different way to do health care. Maybe there's a different way to do family supportive policy.
Because Kenny mentioned an interesting thing. The boomers, first in, last out, 45 hours of work a week. Millennials, not so much. Our parents' generation usually went to work when they graduated from high school or college or finished a stint in the service, and then they worked for the same company for most of their lives. And whether it was true or not, there was this facade of mutual loyalty. You take care of doing a good job, the company will take care of you. And all that went out the window in our lifetimes, and today young people change jobs like we change our socks. So how seriously could whatever loyalty that may remain between employer and employee be damaged by this crisis and by what happens to workers during this crisis?
I think employers are going to be in the driver's seat on this. The employers who do the right thing and treat their employees the right way are going to build loyalty. The employees who do this haphazardly or do it the wrong way are going to make the wedge even deeper.
Wow. Kenny Colbert is president and CEO of the Employers Association in Charlotte. They represent about 900 different employers in the Charlotte region. Bridget Schulte was with us for the hour. She's director of the Better Life Lab and the author of Overwhelmed, How to Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. Thank you both for the hour. And stay well, for crying out loud. Stay well. Thank you for being here. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.